Life is 10% what happens to us and 90% how we respond to it. The right mindset is what separates most successful people from the average person. Changing your mindset can be one of the most valuable skills you can learn to help you create your own kick-ass life. Well, we want to help you begin that process today and give you a free copy of David Wood's training, Mindset, Your Key to Success. In this downloadable training, you'll learn how to develop a winner's mindset, how to overcome limiting and negative beliefs, how to love the word no, and much, much more. To download your free training, simply go to thekickasslife.com/free. That's thekickasslife.com/FRE.
Hi, this is Lisa Nichols, and you're listening to David Wood on the Kick-Ass Life Show.
Want to make your life better? This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Hey, good morning. It's Tuesday, and welcome to the Kick-Ass Life Show. Gosh, we have a lot to be excited about, don't we? A lot to be grateful for. So many wonderful things going on in the world. I'm sitting here about 11 feet from the water, so what you can probably hear in the background are the waves of this beautiful lake crashing on the beach here. There's no real wind. I mean, there's a breeze, but it's just a lot of action in the water. And as I lay in my cabin, I'm so fortunate that the cabin's only about 11 feet from the water. It's a grandfather clause in this area. And when Mike and I bought this property as a sort of a co-owned family retreat, six beautiful acres right on the lake here, we were very fortunate to inherit this grandfather clause, which allows me to be sitting right now on my deck, just a matter of feet from this water. And there's something about water that's playing such a significant role in my life. And I realize that's been a constant for many years. And when I look at my primary home here in Kelowna, you know, we have one of the most gorgeous waterscapes that I've seen in this region. And I'm sitting here in our little cabin now on the lake. And then, of course, we have the island down in Belize, which is surrounded by water. And I realize that as I dig back in my memory, how conscious I've been of finding my homes in locations that were so beautiful and offered me this water potential, the potential to have the water around me all the time. And I know that sounds like a very affluent choice, but what I've shared on the show before about when I lived in France, and I had a warehouse in Le Havre, and you know, I had very little money there in the sense of I wasn't buying a house in France. I was establishing a business, and so I needed a place to stay. So I drove around Le Havre until I found this gorgeous street, which is overlooking the ocean and the shipping lanes. It was just magnificent. And I started knocking on doors, and I said, hey, listen, I'm new in town. I'm looking for somewhere to rent. Do you have a room? Or do you have an apartment for rent? I had no idea what was for rent on that street. I think about the sixth or seventh house, the guy said, oh, come in. So we walk inside, and he said, I'll show you this. And there was a beautiful basement, one-bedroom suite, with these massive windows overlooking the ocean. And he said, it'll be ready in about a week and a half, 2 weeks. I said, awesome. So I rented that for a year. And that's what I mean. It's not a money thing. It's a choice thing. And in some ways, those of you that are not in ownership, it's quite often easier to rent a home of somebody else and get a great price and have an amazing lifestyle. But you know, there's a wonderful thing with the RAS, the reticular activating system of the brain, and often because of our programming, we don't even notice or see these wonderful opportunities that are around us. We don't see that we could be living in something beautiful with just a beautiful appointment and a great location, because we're used to renting. We typically go to the paper and we look at price and a little bit of a location. And that kind of is the way, as opposed to going to an area of town and saying, wow, this is good. This is where I'm going to live, and making it happen. And so, you know, I really feel that's a birthright of all of us. Once we start deprogramming our RAS and start looking at what is possible, what can we have, whether we have money or no money, and money is not a determining factor on happiness. We know that. In fact, you know, the stats show that anything over $12,000 a year does not bring any more happiness. I know that's a crazy stat, but it's true. So with that being said, though, we have a wonderful guest today who truly exemplifies the possibility of choice, because she grew up in a family that had some expectations of her, and she followed those expectations, especially culturally. Her family roots are very, very much dictated a little bit of the direction she should travel, and she did. And she was incredibly successful, but incredibly empty. So I want you to sit back and relax and enjoy my wonderful conversation with the wonderful Tamma Keefs. So, you know, as ever, I always start my calls with this excitement I feel. And I feel incredibly excited because, again, you know, occasionally I'm chatting to someone I've never met and the relationship is just starting. And those of you that know me know that one of my favorite collections is people. And I can already tell by the 5 or 6 minutes that we've been chatting before the show that this person's going to be one of those great collector pieces. She's so, Tamma, how are you?
I'm getting ready to be one of your collector pieces.
There you go. Well, you know, that's
little piece of porcelain on your shelf, baby.
Well, there you go. I'll polish you every day, I promise.
All right.
You know, you got an interesting story because you kind of had it all by kind of the Western world standards. And, you know, you were very, very successful. You did well at school. You went out and did the right stuff. But there was this big empty spot inside of you that kind of has led you to your life's work. Why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, having it all but feeling empty?
Oh, yes, because I think there are so many people out there that relate to that. There are so many professionals who are just brilliant, and they're thinking, is this all there is? So, yeah, I knew early on when I was young that I wanted to write. That was my dream. But I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, to an Orthodox Jewish family. And so basically I got, you're going to write? You're going to starve? You're going to write? And that was the basic go for your dreams talk I got. So I ignored that dream, and I went off to law school and graduated with honors from Harvard Law School. And I ended up on partnership track at a major law firm. And like you said, had all the right things, all the right trappings, the money, the success, what you're supposed to have. But I just felt so empty inside. You know, I just felt like there's got to be something more. There's got to be something else. And I think so many people feel that way. And finally, thank God, a friend of mine said something amazing to me. He said, think about it. If you've been this successful doing something you don't love, what could you do with work you love? And that, for me, was my wake-up call where I realized, I think you get one life, and I want to know where this goes if I'm listening. So that's what began my journey. That's what began this life's work, and it's been amazing.
Tell me, how old were you when you sort of got this wake-up call?
I was young. I was, I think, 26. So, you know, I precociously had my midlife crisis.
20, that very fortuitous for us. And so, you know, you talked about this Orthodox Jewish family, and there's this kind of pressure on you to succeed under the eyes of your parents. Now, with all the work you've done, all the people you've helped with your books, multiple books, I want to talk about one of them specifically in a moment. Do you feel a lot of people get trapped in that sort of like expectation of parents?
Oh, God, yes. I think it's so cultural. You know, I tell that story all the time at readings and at workshops, and I do my Jewish mother accent, you know, and I thought it was like so unique to me. But people will always come up to me and say, are you sure your mother wasn't Swahili? Are you sure your mother wasn't French? Are you sure your mother wasn't Puerto Rican? Because my mother said the same thing. My parents said the same thing. I think that we got many cultural messages of stay safe, be practical, be reasonable, deny what you love, deny what you are, deny what rocks your world, and really just do what's expected. So I think it is a cultural model, and I think it's one we're undoing now.
Was it harder for you, though, as a graduate of Harvard Law School, you know, was it harder because you'd stepped into and you tasted the Kool-Aid of success? And I'm sure you either you drove the nice car or had the nice apartment. You were climbing the ladder. And I mean, you were well up the ladder because, I mean, graduating Harvard.
There was some partnership track and everything.
Yeah. So you got it all going on. I mean, was it harder to sort of like listen to that little voice inside that was yelling at you at that point?
It was terrifying. It was terrifying. You do like all this bargaining with yourself, like, oh, come on, just drink more. You'll be okay. You know, like, you know, just see another therapist. Just suck it up. You know, deny what you really want. Just make this work. Because, you know, it was very attractive to seemingly have everything and to seemingly have this bright future. But, you know, people always say to me, oh, my God, you were so courageous. How did you do that? But I don't know that it was courage as much as it was desperation. And I think when you see through it, when you did drink the Kool-Aid and it's not working, when you do have these trappings and it's not working, you don't feel alive, you don't feel good. You know, as an attorney, I was losing the ability to even concentrate or focus or willpower my way to succeed anymore because I was so unhappy. So I think desperation gave me courage. It was this feeling of, oh, my God, I don't know what else to do. I'm scared out of my mind, but I'm dying. Mm. So I've got to choose the one life that promises something.
It's interesting. What went through my mind as you were sharing your story is that there must be so many people who never, ever hear the voice because they get sucked up. they get drinking the Kool-Aid real young. And
yes,
that conversation comes so much later in life inside of them where, you know, that once they arrive at nirvana with their big house and car. And again, we know there's nothing wrong with that because I'm obviously you have both.
I like some of that nirvana. Yeah.
I don't want to come across as one of these new
but
age.
But not at the cost of meaning. That's the difference.
Right. Yeah. So talk to me again, you know, a little bit about this wake up call, you know, that you had a dream. Some people don't have that dream earlier or they lose that dream earlier. But so what is the inner conversation? What is delve in a little bit with me on this sort of this
that's
emptiness, this hole, this
great.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about that.
You know, I guess to be honest with you, I just kept feeling haunted. I just kept feeling this ache, like this isn't the right life. This isn't the right life. You didn't come here to be this miserable. You didn't come here to suck down 10 cups of espresso just to focus, you know, I just kept having this feeling of being haunted. And I write about it in my first book, This Time I Dance. I write about this scene that I had this fear that at the end of my life, there would be like all these beings in white robes and they would show me everything my life could have been. And they would show me, here's the books you were meant to write. Here's the editors you were meant to meet. Here's how Richard Gere would have loved you. No, I'm just like, you know, just all these amazing fantasies. And I thought, I can't get to the end of my own life and know it could have worked out, but I never even tried it, that I never risked it. You know, I just kept feeling haunted. So, you know, you say that, and I hear this a lot, that people say, well, I don't know what I want, or I don't have a dream, or you had a dream. I didn't have a formal dream. I had no idea what I was going to do. I just knew somehow I wanted to be a writer. Somehow I wanted to be free. I wanted to walk along beaches. I didn't want to be killing myself writing a brief. You know, and I think everybody has that inner voice. Everybody has that instinct. Everybody knows inside what's right for them and what's not.
Mm. Now, before we go into your work, which I'm really inspired to do, da 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 da. Excuse that little pun there, but talk to me about your mom. I mean, was your mom freaking out when you started sort of going off the rails? She's at the club talking about her lawyer daughter doing everything she was meant to be doing, and suddenly you're coming home saying, "Mom, I'm gonna write."
I would basically get the calls because I wasn't living there anymore. I'd get did you find a real job yet? Do you even know what Susan Finkenberg is making now? She married the plastic surgeon too. I mean, you know, like you'd get all these things. And I know people who are going after their dreams, going after their love, they know this. You know, the people around them sometimes don't always know how to support them, don't always know how to see it this way. So I think my family thought I was going through a phase. I grew up in New York City, and I had moved out to Denver, Colorado, and I think they thought I was like breathing way too much Rocky Mountain High air, you know. And I think they thought that this would that I would change my mind at some point, but haven't changed it yet.
It reminds me of a joke, and I hope you don't mind this, but I have a lot. I must be Jewish somewhere deep inside, because I have so many Jewish friends that I'm deeply in love with, and I but you know, the Jewish mom walking down the road, and someone comes up and says, you know, how old are the kids now? And she says, well, the lawyer's 6 and the doctor's 7.
That's exactly it. And you know what? I think in our culture, that's still true. You know, that we have these prescribed definitions of success, and a courageous rock star, wild, kick-ass life is one where you're inventing your own definition of success, where you're really being alive in your own way.
Well, you know, and I know that you talk about in your work sort of the ups and downs of that journey. But, you know, you come out with your first book, This Time I Dance. And what was that like? I mean, when you, so were you still working in law when you started dabbling, or did you just jump right out of it in both feet and just go for that little voice?
You know, because, and again, everybody's path is so different, you know, so I'm a career expert, but I will always tell people to listen to their own chemistry, their own way. So I'll tell my story as like what I did, but it's not prescriptive for everybody. For me at that time, I really had to leave law. It was killing me. I literally got to the point of not wanting to live anymore. I really got to that point. So at that point, I really had to just get out. I got a job waiting tables is what I did, which went over so well with my family.
Oh, your mom must have loved that one. I can hear
that
one.
Oh, that was great. Then the calls hit, you're serving nachos. You're serving nachos with a Harvard degree. You're serving nachos. That's what I would get. I love you too, Mom. So that was my journey, is that I just left everything to explore this. And there, you know, I think a lot of the self-help books that are out there like promise you the 5 easy steps or the 30 days. And it makes it sound like it's so clear cut, you know, that there's going to be 5 things you do or 8 steps or a slick program you take. And for me, this journey has been constantly one of listening to the love inside you instead of your fear. And it's up and down. So I left law and I dabbled with writing. Then at one point I went back to law in a different capacity to try it. So like there's just different phases. And it took me 12 years to write that first book.
Wow. So this is really, when you talk about listening to the love, I've heard you say as well, listening to your unparalleled genius, you really had to listen pretty hard.
For survival, baby. For survival.
Yeah, but listen to how alive you are and that sizzle and crackle and pop that sort of goes on. And just, again, you and I just met, and I feel like I've known you for a long, long time already. And I'm sure a lot of people feel that around you. There's this kind of... there's this knowingness that you seem to sort of exude of both sides. How important is both sides? How important is it for life to sort of deal you some lemons so that you can really taste the beauty?
Oh, I don't want to give the universe any credit that way. I don't want to encourage it. Don't be encouraging it now. but to speak to your point, because it is a brilliant point. I do believe that it is our challenges, and it is our struggles, and it is our personal quest that often gives rise to our greatest gifts. You know, I think it's Carl Jung said that where you're wounded, you're gifted. Where you're wounded, you're gifted. I make my entire living running around the world, running around the country, speaking about how I screwed up my career and how I got so miserable and how I undid that and how I found this unparalleled genius, amazing brightness within me that I believe we all have. And so it's my own personal struggles that have led me to that. And I'm very honest. I mean, all my workshops are that way. My books are that way. I'm not an expert that says, there's the 5 steps. I just take you through all the, you know, all the times that I'm freaking out, all the times that I'm scared. Because if you're really doing the work you love, if you're really doing what you came here to do, I think you are scared. I think you're peaceful. I think you're loving. I think it's amazing. But I think you're going to your next edge always. That path of listening is incredibly courageous. In a world that doesn't teach us to listen, I think it's amazingly courageous. And I think we're living in inspired times that are asking us to do this.
I often think about, you know, the show's in 154 countries, and I haven't checked since I just got back from a month in Africa, so I haven't checked. It could be 160 by now, but it was 154 when I left a month ago. And, wow. You know, we have people listening from all over, different cultures, and it's staggering. It always surprises me.
Wow.
But what I found then is the universal language of truth.
Yes.
It's obviously very powerful because, you know, one thing that I'm really big on is this, you know, get rid of the BS and let's get down to truth. And there's something that I've heard you say now three times on this call. And when I watched the video on your website, which I thought was very, very enchanting, you know, you talk about this listening.
That's because I let you see what I look like on like this call.
That's right. I'm going to tell everyone that she wouldn't let me see her because her desk was messy.
So much for honesty and genuine stare. Out the window, baby.
That's all right. That's all right. She's got a messy desk. She doesn't want me to see it, but she's going to make up for it later. I'm going to have a look at her desk once it's clean. But
good luck with that.
But talking, you know, you mean the clean desk?
Yes, that won't be happening in this lifetime.
Oh, dear. So talk to me a little bit about this listening, because I think that, you know, if that's where it started for you, and you talk about it as being so essential, then I think about these people around the world that are listening to this call, that maybe this next part that you're going to share, it could be the beginning of them tapping into the love of their life, the passions of their life. So let's talk about what does that mean to listen?
I would love that more than anything. You know, for me, if I could help anybody listen to that brilliance and that love with inside them. So, you know, I think the first thing what it means, because people will say to me all the time, but I don't hear an inner voice, but I don't know what I want, but I have no idea. I hear that all the time. And what I believe is if you're not hearing your inner voice, if you're not hearing a voice of gentleness, compassion, invitation, excitement, creativity, love, if you're not hearing that, then it means that you're listening to something else. It's not that you're not hearing anything. You're just, many of us are listening to our negativity. We're listening to fear. We're listening to constriction. We're listening to the voice of the culture, what our parents said. So for years, if somebody had told me, listen to an inner voice, I had no idea what the heck they would have was saying. You know, I was like, first of all, I'd be like, which one? You know, there's like 8,000 of them for starters, you know?
And how many of them sounded like your mother?
Yeah, exactly. It comes out. It does. But if you're not hearing what you love, it's oftentimes because you're hearing fear. And oftentimes fear, by the way, can sound like practicality. So I'll meet people all the time that, you know, they'll have like a tiniest little bit of an instinct like, wow, I think I'd like to paint. Or, wow, I think I'd like to start a business. Or, wow, I think I'd like to, you know, help heal somebody. And immediately they'll hear this other voice, oh, that's ridiculous. Or you can't do that. Or you're too old. Or you don't have qualifications. Or in this economy. I mean, so again, we're always listening to something. So I want you to start paying attention to what you listen to. And I think one of the best ways to listen to your inner voice is do something you love. Do anything you love. If you love hanging out with your dog, go hang out with your dog. You know, if you love, you know, writing, go write. If you love hanging out with people, go hang out with people. When you do what you love, take a class, take a pottery class, take a business class, take whatever it is that excites you. When you do something you love, you connect with everything that you are. You connect with something inside you that's amazing. And you don't always know that something is inside you is there until you're doing something you love. So I guess that would be a first step.
I love that because I suppose it gives permission for two things. For those people who are really clear on the things they love, once they start immersing themselves in that, within mm-hmm. there is that seed of awakening. I mean, maybe that's a little woo-woo, but, you know, that seed of
awakening. Oh, get woo-woo with me, honey. We can go there.
We go. I know. We go everywhere with you. I get that. But then there's the other part of those people who I feel, and I often think of a lot of my students are women. I'd probably say about 80% of my students are women. And, you know, when I look at that sort
the
of
accent.
Woman. Yeah, is that what it is? Hello. Hi, Mrs. Moneypenny. But, you know, what I often think about is those women who are in that generation ahead of me, or maybe two generations ahead of me, that really sort of gave up their whole life for their kids, their husband, whatever. And I've sort of so lost that sort of little inner voice or that love and passion is to maybe just go and try lots of things in the beginning until they start discovering what they love. Is that kind of a secret there?
Absolutely. Exactly. Go ahead and sample life. You know, if people, you know, like you said, if you really don't know what you love, here's another thing that comes up for people. Sometimes, you know, if you had asked me when I was practicing law, you can do anything you want. You can do anything you want. What do you really, really, really want to do? If I was being honest, I would have told you I wanted to take a nap. That's really what I wanted to do, you know. And so I had a chapter in my first book called The Year of Sleeping Dangerously, because for me, when you've worked so hard, or maybe if you've been a mom and you've worked so hard that way, or you've been in so many roles for so long and you don't know your true identity, sometimes it's not about what you're doing. Sometimes it's about undoing. Sometimes it's about learning to rest. It's learning to do nothing. It's learning to stare into space and go take a walk, or learn how to meditate, or turn off the radio, turn off other voices, turn off your regular roles. Be kind to yourself. Be gentle to yourself. Take a hot bath. You know, if you're kind to yourself and you're loving to yourself and you're encouraging of yourself, it is impossible that you won't hear what you're meant to do.
I love it. Yeah, we could almost stop the call right there, but I'm not going to. You know, I love what you said. I mean, and this was something that a quote I have of yours. It says, "I was put on this earth to champion visionary minds, creative souls, freedom junkies, love-driven entrepreneurs, and change agents, and anyone who wants to live and work from inspiration instead of fear. I may have also been put on here to eat great Thai food." So, you know, but what I love about that is this championing visionary minds, and what I love is the simplicity of what you're saying. And because I do think that transformation is...
Oh, you think I'm saying something simple, do you?
Well, you know, you're quite a simple person.
Calling me a simpleton now, huh? I went from being unparalleled brilliance to simpleton.
You know, if the little hat fits, wear it.
I don't like your accents anymore.
Oh, dear. No, but what I love is that the simpleness of that message is to sort of get in touch with that love, that passion. But then how it awakens this champion visionary minds or creative souls or freedom junkies is so talk to me a little bit about this. So you've gone in 12 years, the first book, and your last book, which I mean, I think, well, how many books have you written? Five?
No, two.
I had
rush
more than that.
Honey. Don't rush me.
No, there you go. But this last book, Inspired and Unstoppable. Talk to me about once you sort of made that shift, and then you start feeling that inspiration. When that inspiration started to heat up in you, and then you started to really become unstoppable, and that really oozes out of you. I feel it in our conversation. I feel it in your video. I feel it on your website. How important is this inspiration piece?
Oh, it's everything. It's everything. And, you know, I wrote Inspired and Unstoppable, Wildly Succeeding in Your Life's Work, because I wanted everyone to know that they have a calling, everyone to know that they have something they're meant to do here on this planet, and that there is no small callings. There are no big callings. There's just the genius that's inside you and the love that's inside you that you're meant to give. And the reason I wrote Inspired and Unstoppable was because what happens, you know, I've coached so many entrepreneurs and artists and visionaries and leaders, and what I kept seeing was that they'd get inspired, they'd get excited, they'd get ignited, and then they'd lose it. They'd get scared, they'd freak out, a bill would come, it wasn't taking off the way they thought, or they doubted what they were doing. And what I wanted people to know is that this is a journey. That this is not a five-step process. This is not an overnight thing. It's your life's journey. I'm going to be on this journey for the rest of my life about being inspired and unstoppable. And what that means for me is it means never stopping yourself in this lifetime. The fears are supposed to come up. The struggles are supposed to come up. It's like what you were saying earlier about, you know, the lemons to lemonade. The challenges do come up. But that's how we learn to become inspired and unstoppable. And I deeply believe that everything that is going on in your life is here to serve you. Everything that goes on in your life is here to guide you and serve you if you learn how to listen to that inspired voice, that voice of your spirit, that voice of your soul, that voice of something greater, more loving. So I want everybody to know that they have a calling, they have a path here, and it really is about the walk of, will you choose in your lifetime over and over and over again to be inspired and to be unstoppable and to not stop yourself?
I love how you started that. You said there's no big or small callings. And mm-hmm. what came up for me as you said that was this comparison, is how easy it is for comparison to stop us, you know, and we look at sometimes a calling, if we measure it against somebody else, if we start to sort of compare it. In the beginning, having parents like you did who wanted you to be lawyers and sort of
the beginning, the middle, and the end, but go ahead. Yes.
Yeah, but the comparing wages, yes. comparing cars, comparing everything, yes. success. How long did it take you to discover that the size of the calling didn't matter and that the comparison was really one of the big enemies there?
I will let you know when I get there. That may be down the road. My own healing is that, you know, because I do have, you know, an ambitious personality. I'm wired that way. I was cultured that way. And I really do believe on the deepest level that when you're expressing your love on this planet, it's just the note you came to sing. There's nothing big, there's nothing small. It's just right or it's not. But as a human being, I still get stuck in it. I'll still compare myself to other authors or other speakers and what they have and what their following looks like. And so my own healing is the same thing. Like, my own fears will come up. And so what will happen is that will dilute my inspiration, that will dilute my creativity, that will dilute my resources. And then my inner work is to deal with that, is to champion myself, to go back to myself. And by the way, the thing I do is, when I'm truly giving my gift, when I'm truly serving, when I'm truly doing what I'm meant to do, there is no comparison. There's no space for it. There's just that love and that genius coming through you. And, you know, like you said, collecting people, I'm the same way. I love people. When I see the light in someone else's eyes, I get emails from all over the world, people telling me, oh my God, your book changed my life, la, la, la. In that moment, when you know that something you're doing is helping someone else become who they're meant to be, there is no comparison. There is nothing like that on the planet. So, I think we're always going to have our foibles. I do.
Foibles. I love that. But yeah, I love that. And what you said, just the note you came to sing. It opens again in my mind. You speak in pictures for me. So I love it. I love this idea, though, that once you step into this love, the self, the thing you came to do, or it doesn't matter how big or small it is. Did you find that once you stepped in, all these other doors started to open, and sort of the thing sort of takes on a calling of its own? And as we step into doing more of what we love becomes apparent to us. Is that kind
of absolutely? Absolutely. And, you know, and one of the things I'd like to say, too, is that it's not like a one-step thing, like you step into the thing you love and that's it. That's the thing you're meant to do. It keeps evolving. It keeps shifting. You keep growing. It keeps growing. It's an ongoing process. You keep creating. And so, yes, absolutely, the doors open for you. But that doesn't mean, you know, everybody always thinks that, once I do my bliss, it's all going to line up, it's all going to happen. And there's truth to that. There really is truth to that. But there's also truth to, there are things we're learning on the way, and there are things that were, you know, it didn't all happen for me at once, because I think I was meant to hone my excellence and get better at it. And I think the universe was kind and didn't make me a best-selling author before I had something real to say.
I love that, because, I mean, you alluded to that earlier as well about this, you know, how easy it is to be stopped when, you know, the bill comes in, the doubts
yes.
creep in, and obviously you've gone through that journey. Talk to me. I'm going to just ask a little bit. We're getting a little bit of blowback from your mic, so I wonder if you could move away from it just a tad as you answer this. But your okay. book, talk to me a little bit about your book, Inspired and Unstoppable. Can you just share, open that page with me and lead me in it so that we can tell people why they really want to go in there and pick up this book?
Oh, yummy. You know what? If it's okay, I'll just read a paragraph, if that's okay with you.
I would love that.
Okay. Let me get that out. I wasn't thinking of doing that. So I guess mostly what I wanted people to know is that I wanted them to know that your dreams aren't frivolous, that they're inspired, that they're imperative, that we need your intelligence and your gifts on the planet at this time. So this is just a paragraph. There is nothing wavy gravy about believing in your wildest dreams. Your inspired inner voice is as real as bunions or a bouillon soup. It's not putting your head in the sand to believe in a higher intelligence than mass consciousness. It's putting your head in the game. Love is the strongest power on the planet. You want results? Trust your inspired self. It's a presence and intelligence that dwarfs everything else.
Mm, beautiful.
So I guess what I wanted to do in this book and what I do in this book is I've coached so many people over 20 years, and I saw that when I supported them, when I said the right thing, when I asked the right question, they would shift. There would be this light. They would be chugging along again in their dreams. And so I just wanted to put that all in a book, because not everybody could afford coaching. And so I just want to put that all in a book, and I just tell all my stories of where I got stuck or where my clients got stuck and how they shifted it. You know, so there's different techniques in the book, but mostly it's very honest and it's very real, because I'm one of those people that, you know, I didn't want the fancy slick expert. I always wanted to know, how did you do it? You know, what did you do when you were a mess? You know, how did you do it? So that's basically, the book is basically, I'm a mess and here's how I did it. Something like that.
Yeah, what I love though is I really get this sense, and correct me if I'm wrong, I get the sense that it's really for everyone. It's not like, you know, if you're already in your dreams that you can't learn from this book. It's almost like that, you know, it's for those people that haven't even heard that voice yet, but it's also for the people that have just got that nervous energy inside where they're doing something they hate or dislike and they're ready to make a step. But it's also for those people that have already taken a step and are already yes. in it. I mean, it kind of talks to everyone, doesn't it?
It does, because the path is the same. It's always going to be, it's really the deeper work of the book is really about how do I listen? How do I listen to that inspired voice within me? Because what I see is a lot of people who do know their dreams, a lot of people who have started their businesses or who are doing their life's calling or who are doing their passion, then they get stuck in like trying to do everything right. You know, like, what do the experts say? What am I supposed to do? How do I do the website? You know, how do I get SEO? You know, like all this stuff, you get so overwhelmed by the quote, right ways to succeed. I certainly did. And again, my walk was about learning you have your own inspired success strategy. There is something in each of us that is wired to succeed. There is a perfect, brilliant design in each of us. And it's about learning how to listen to that, follow that, trust it, think the thoughts that support it, and have the life that you're meant to have.
Mm. So take me into your world right now. And as you've gone through this journey, and you know, we've started off with you doing the right things and really almost losing your life for it, and mm-hmm. and then really stepping out and sort of, you know, banging your head against many walls and but listening to the voice, and where are you at right now? How does it feel to be in this position where, you know, you've got a book that's on the bestseller list, number one on Amazon, you know, really, you know, really, I mean, do you sort of pinch yourself a little bit and say, oh my God, I'm here? Oh, I'm not.
Being crazy me, you know, part of me, yeah, I'm on the bestseller list, but how long will it last? You know, I mean, just there's that part of my brain always. But truly, deeply, I feel this amazing gratitude, to be honest with you. I mean, to get the emails that I get or the following that I have a really active tribe on Facebook, and I have a very active following of people who are doing this work and who want to join this tribe. And it's amazing to me. It is like the greatest privilege on the planet to do what you came to do. You know, I always tell people, I get paid to be me. You know, I get paid to like splatter out. What am I thinking now? What do I want now? And I'm meeting the people I love most, because when you do your calling, when you give your gift, you're being the most true to yourself you could possibly be. And when you connect with people on that level, there's so much love there. So I feel incredibly grateful to this universe for my gift, for my life, for my love. I feel incredibly grateful for the movement that's going on. And days are hard also. You know, it's still a lot of work. There's still too much to do. I'm still me. Every now and then that still crops up. Like, oh my God, I still have my mind to deal with. And again, I'm going to be healing for the rest of my life. And that's what this journey is. But it's amazing. And that's why I'm so motivated. I want more people to have that light in their eyes. I want more people to know that freedom. I want people to know what it's like to do what you came to do. Even if it's planting a garden, or if it's loving your children more, or if it's starting a nonprofit, or if it's, you know, inventing something new in medicine. person. You know, I mean, my excitement is so many of us have wild, crazy ideas in us because we're the next generation of possibility. We're the next generation. And I deeply believe we're creating a new mainstream of possibility. And I'm so excited to be part of that.
I have to ask before I've got a few more questions for you, but, you know, how's your mom doing?
My mom unfortunately has passed away, aww. But yes. But you know what, to be honest with you, it was really cool because she became a champion in her own way. She would be, I don't know what you're doing, but you're glowing. You're glowing. You know, and so all of a sudden she'd be bragging to everybody. She never quite understood my work, you know, like you listen to an inner voice, you know what I mean? But she'd be bragging to everybody. Oh, my daughter, she's at Omega, she's here, she's there. She wouldn't even know what these places were, you know. So she became a great champion. And she saw that I was happy, and I think that's what every parent really wants.
Yeah, I do believe that. I have two boys, and I really feel that deep inside. So, you know, this whole
she
piece,
still would have preferred I married the Jewish doctor, but you know, whatever.
talk about authenticity for me, because what I pick up, one of my big things that I love to teach about is, you know, this kind of authentic self. This that you said, you know, you get paid to be you, and all your idiosyncrasies and your wonder and your, you know, the gems woman. And the crap that comes along the next, and just to sort of show up as you, do you feel like, you know, you can just be you in your work, and that's what makes the magic, that's what makes the glow happen, because of that touch of authenticity that you live by?
Absolutely. In fact, in my career, the more I become myself, the less I do, the less I quote work, the better it gets. And I never understood that. You know, initially I thought, but I have to be brilliant. I have to be an expert. I have to say something wise now. You know, I can't spill my coffee, you know, which I usually do because I'm enthusiastic and I'll knock it over. But what it's done, what people have helped me see, is authenticity empowers other people. You know, so many people have written to me or said to me, I've actually had clients say, Tammy, you know what I love about you? You're so screwed up. I love that. It gives me so much hope. I have hope now, which I never put on my brochure. That won't be on my website. But I realize now we live in a culture where we see the instant success, we see the slick packaging, we see the images of people on People magazine or Success magazine, and we don't see the real human beings. And I think because I share so much of my own personal fears or so much of my own personal journey, it really does empower other people. It really does, you know, because they see both. They see I'm a human being and they see it's working. You know, and they see that extra. And, you know, I have incredible energy and stamina. You know, people will look at my calendar and think, oh, my God, how can you do those retreats and, you know, back to back? And how can you do this and how can you do that? But it doesn't take energy when you're being who you are, you know, of like, this isn't work. This gives me energy. I mean, before I spoke to you, part of me was like, oh, God, I can't believe I have to do an interview. I'm tired. I'm blah, blah, blah. Then I start doing it and it gives me energy, because the more you express who you really are, the more energy you get. So I think authenticity is another way of saying inspired. It's another way of saying brilliant. It's another way of saying empowered. I think it's the ticket.
It's funny, you know, I just got back from Africa, and one of the people that were on our trip, I won't use her name, but, you know, been on Oprah 9 times, been in the White House. I mean, as I listen to the things she's accomplished, she's a best-selling author, blah, blah, blah. But she's as wacky as anything, you know, and just wonderfully shows up in her body, in all of her idiosyncrasies. She, you know, and it's so refreshing. And I always feel like, you know, my personal quest of authenticity is just that seeker of truth. But it's interesting that, you know, in her wild and crazy world that she lives in, that she's the ability to open all doors, the ability to really suck the juice out of life every minute, and her tirelessness. I mean, we climbed Kilimanjaro and she's like 66 and she still has energy and she's writing and she's this and she's filming. But I really see that as a part of what you're talking about is that authentic kind of, you know, it's not living without apology. It's just showing up fully and being totally who you are. It does open doors, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I think you can do all of that because you're opening all the doors. It takes so much energy not to be yourself. It is so exhausting day after day to lie to someone else or to lie to yourself. You know, many people are suffering from that and suffering with that. It takes so much energy. It's exhausting not to be who you're meant to be. And I think, you know, to live a crazy life and to do as much, you just have to have no filters. You just have to be present. And I think some of that comes from self-love also. You know, for me, I'm learning to be more and more present in everything because I'm learning to judge myself less. I'm learning to make it no big deal. You know, oh, so you said the stupid thing. Okay, so what? You also said a brilliant thing.
What's interesting, though, is that, again, I think when we started the call, which is that ebb and flow, that peak and valley, it's in the mistakes that we sort of get that springboard. If we keep moving, springboard into that bigger life. And it's the ability to sort of look back at all the crazy crap that went wrong. And it doesn't make us bulletproof, but it certainly makes it easier to be more authentic when we've made a lot of mistakes. But I think when we live that perfection line and we try and walk it, and we're so afraid of ever stepping over it, or I mean, that we don't have any experience to call on to actually get authentic. So would you say that the path to authenticity is a bit messy in the beginning?
I think it's a bit messy in the beginning, in the middle, in the end.
I knew you were going to say that.
I think it's always ongoing, baby. And you know what? And I really invite people to think about, you know, that all your crazy mistakes, all your blunders, all the places, whatever. I think if you were really honest and you looked back through the filter of wisdom and love and genius, you would see there were no mistakes.
Mm.
You would see there were no accidents. I can look back at my career, at things that I thought were terrible or didn't happen or whatever, and now I can see the mercy in it, the kindness in it. So I think you're learning all the time. You know, I have a saying in Inspired and Unstoppable where I say, trust your life more than your script. Trust your life more than your script. Because what happens is people start off with a dream. They start off with an excitement, and then it doesn't work out the way they think, or somebody rejects them, or something happens. And what happens then is they think it's a mistake. They think it's a blunder. They think it's terrible, and they shut down. They start judging themselves. And because you judge yourself, you can't be available to life when you're judging yourself. If I'm judging myself and judging what is, I'm not available. I'm not present. I'm not present to the next amazing opportunity. So I'm always teaching people to trust your life more than your script. It's going beautifully. It's going perfect. It's always going perfect. And you'll only see that by being present. You'll only see that by being self-loving. You'll only see that by fully jumping in.
Mm. And I know that if I ask you this question, I'm almost sure of the answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Is that, you know, that darkest moment when you were sort of, you'd followed this Harvard, you know, and being a partner in a big law firm, and you were suffocating in that area of your life where your dreams were almost invisible to you, but that little voice kept calling to you. You wouldn't go back and trade that. I mean, having had that part of your story, it becomes so important, doesn't it, in the end?
Absolutely. You know, I often, that's a great question, because I've often wondered, like, what if I'd listened sooner? You know, like, what if I'd never gone to law school? What if I just went and, you know, became a writer right off the bat? But you're absolutely right. Everything makes you what you are. I personally needed that experience for many reasons. I needed that experience because I personally needed to know on a visceral level that money wouldn't do it for me. That as much as I love money, I love recognition, I love prestige, all that stuff, I had to realize on a visceral level that that alone, without the meaning, without the purpose, without the self-expression, for me, wouldn't do it. I had to know that, because I have never, ever doubted that again. And I absolutely believe it's you know, that was part of my destiny. I think I had to have that meltdown. I think it was genius that I went to Harvard Law School, you know? I mean, I look, you know, some people talk about, like, past lives, they were, you know, Cleopatra in a past life. I think I went to Harvard Law School in a past life. I can't relate to that incarnation at all. You know? It just, but I deeply believe what brilliance that, you know, I think that's part of my life design or plan, because it gives me the credibility now to speak to people who might not have listened, who might have heard someone like me and said, oh, that's really nice. Oh, that's woo-woo. Follow your inspiration, right? You know, and so I think it opens doors for me. It also lets other people know that, you know what, if I left Harvard, you could leave Walmart. You know, it's like if I left this level, oops, Steve, that crappy job that you hate, right? Whatever it is.
I love that. I love it so much. So look, I mean, we've only got a couple of minutes left. I want to ask you this question. You know, the show is called The Kick-Ass Life. And what does that mean to you? To have a kick-ass life, how would you define a kick-ass life for Tamara?
Kick-ass life for Tamara. Yummy, yummy. Question. It's evolving, but I think the first thing that I would always say is that for me, a kick-ass life would be, you know, that you're living the life that you know that you came for. You know, it's like, for me, I do not doubt the life I have. I know for this I came, for this I came. You know, it's just like that sense of meaning and purpose. I have that deep peace. But I also think, for me, a kick-ass life is creativity. I love being creative. I love, like, you're writing and you think you're doing great, and then bam, another door opens, another window opens, and all of a sudden, wow, I'm on fire. I can rule the world. You know, just that high of being a creative, alive person, and the freedom that comes, the freedom in this lifetime to know this life is set up to support my highest design, that there are so many infinite possibilities that I feel like I'm just getting started. You know, like, for me, it's not about arriving. I'm going to be arriving the rest of my life. So I think for me, it's this journey is amazing.
Mm. Well, you know, we're almost at the witching hour. We're kind of a minute out. I wonder if there's a question I could have asked, or one you would like me to ask, or any last thought. I mean, maybe just to sort of round out the show. And before I sort of let you finish up, I just want to say thank you. You are a gem. And I just love this oozing energy that sort of comes down this microphone. And it's very, very contagious and sticky and wonderful. So thank you.
Thank you. I love being sticky and wonderful. I haven't been called that before in my lifetime, so I'll put that. Thank you.
Put that one in the resume. Harvard, sticky and wonderful.
Yes, and I love the work that you're doing. I love the authentic conversation. Thank you for doing this. So I think one of the things that I always want people to know is that you can't plan an inspired life. You're not going to plan this life, you know, that you can't see how it's going to happen. You know, when I wrote my book, my first book, for 12 years, I didn't have an agent. I didn't have a contract. I didn't have a publisher, but I kept following that inner voice. And I originally self-published it. And then 4 months after I self-published it, someone in the big wig publishing industry discovered it and wrote to me and said it was the best book they'd ever found on finding your calling and doing what you love. And she had actually been having a meltdown in her own career, and that's why she was like scouring Amazon and found my little self-published book. And she got it to the publisher I dreamed of most. She got it to the president of the company. They took the book, they published it, the exact title. It was amazing. And so that's what I mean when I say you can't plan an inspired life. You can't see how your life is going to unfold. You can't see how those doors are going to open. You can't see how the support's going to come in. But if you follow that voice moment by moment, that genius, that love, and stay inspired all along the way, things are going to happen that you just couldn't make happen any other way. And we're living in these inspired times. We're living in a new paradigm, and we need your answers. We need your genius. We need your gifts. We need your connection to the divine, to that amazing possibility. So I would just want everybody to know that you can't plan an inspired life, and that the dreams inside you, the calling inside you, it's not frivolous. It's not silly. It's not limited. It's imperative. It's what you're here for.
Mm. And I'm going to finalize this with a quote from a very inspired, sticky, authentic, crazy, lovely woman. And it is, trust your life more than your script. Tamara, thank you. You are beautifully incredible. And I just enjoyed this. I'll have you back on the show.
I am so honored. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And thanks to all the amazing listeners who are joining us in this conversation. Mm.
Oh, my goodness. As you can tell, you know, there's just so much there, so much good stuff for us to take away. And really listening to ourselves being a big one. You know, it's so easy to listen externally, but listening to our true heart's calling is something that, again, as I started the call, we just get programmed so often out of that even thinking. you know, into the survival struggle mode. And for some of us, it's just not, even those of us that can afford to choose to live places, quite often we haven't really, really sat down with ourselves and really listened to that innermost conversation. But I love so much of what Tamer had to share. In fact, I loved it all. But I really want you to sort of maybe re-listen to the show and start asking yourself that question about becoming unstoppable, and really, you know, learning that the inspiration that we live by will create the unstoppability and allow us to really step into a really, truly kick-ass life. So with that being said, I'm going to get my computer out here, return to the serenity of the lake, the bobbing up and down of our sailboat out there, which I can't wait to get out and get those sails up, and just really sort of reach out to each of you with deep gratitude for, you know, your place in the show, and knowing that the show wouldn't exist without you. And 171 countries now, 171 countries broadcasting to. And one other last little favor, again, if you're loving the show, you want to help out, if you want to go on to our website, thekickasslife.com, you can give a little donation that will help us out, help keep the doors open, help us get more staff and expand into what we'd like to do here. That would be awesome. You can do a monthly thing. Don't forget, you know, it's something that we have to do every month. But it truly means a lot to me that you can support it, because, you know, the other options are truly to bring on a lot of advertisers, which I really am steering away from because I understand, you know, what I love about the show is the flow. I'm not saying we won't have some advertisers. In fact, there are some knocking on our door right now with the success of the show. But again, as much as I can, if you guys are willing to come to the plate and help out a little bit, and it doesn't have to be a lot. But if you're in the mood, you can do a lot. I accept all lots. So with that being said, hey, Jen's just walking off to the deck to do yoga. Morning, Jen.
Morning.
So anyway, we will see you definitely on the other side.
That was kick-ass.